Good afternoon, everybody. Please be seated. Get my spectacles out here. Our final case today is case number 68951, Clark County versus Tansey. We have Ms. Givens and Mr. Marks. Ms. Givens? And did you want to reserve any time?
Yes, sir.
How much?
5 minutes.
Okay, we'll try to keep an eye on the clock for you.
Honorable Justices, may it please the Court, Yolanda Givens on behalf of Clark County. As stated, I would like to reserve 5 minutes for my rebuttal argument following argument from opposing counsel. The issue before you today involves subject matter jurisdiction as well as standing. Those are questions of law and are subject to de novo review. In this case, the District Court lacked subject matter jurisdiction to provide relief to Mr. Tansey for his breach of contract claim against Clark County. Before looking to federal law, it's proper to first look to Nevada law, which is controlling on the subject. In this case, the District Court had no power to grant relief to Mr. Tansey because he did not have the legal right to seek or receive the requested relief. There is no District Court remedy under the CBA, Collective Bargaining Agreement. There is no District Court remedy under common law contract principles.
Well, what happens in this case where the union didn't pursue representation of Mr. Tansey regarding his claims? He was kind of abandoned by his own bargaining nation. Couldn't he bring a contract action against the county since the union wouldn't proceed on his behalf?
Actually, the exclusive remedy for a covered member of a bargaining unit is the negotiated procedures and remedy that have been between the parties to the CBA, in this case, Clark County, and SEIU Local 1107. Mm-hmm. The negotiated procedures required certain timelines by which to comply to ask for the arbitration. Mm-hmm. His union, the record shows, actually had a grievance review board meeting, voluntarily decided not to pursue the arbitration. Thereby, the grievance is considered abandoned. The county's position that once the grievance is abandoned, the rights that are within it for the individual employee are thereby extinguished, never to be revived. That would be the county's response to that particular question. Since there's no district court remedy under contract, there's also no district court remedy under common law principles. As stated, when Tansey's union abandoned his grievance, his right to pursue the claims that were within it extinguished. In exchange for benefits that Mr. Tansey received under the CBA, he gave up his individual right of remedy against the county for disputes which arise under the CBA. Those are the only rights we're discussing. And also the plain language of NRS 288-140 subsection 2 provides guidance on this issue, as well as footnote 3 in the Ruiz versus City of North Las Vegas case. It stated, local government employees who are members of a union are precluded from acting for themselves with respect to conditions of their employment. Specifically, the statute does not permit a union member to seek judicial relief in the event that he is not satisfied with the outcome of CBA negotiated procedures. Tansey was a union member. He was dissatisfied with his union's abandonment of his grievance. It was impermissible that he was granted any judicial relief. This court has stated that individual employees may not appeal or judicially enforce unfavorable arbitration awards. That's in Ruiz as well. Other courts have ruled that individual employees may not compel arbitration where the union expressly determines not to appeal. These rulings have been based on one conclusion, that is that the employee lacks standing. Those are the cases concerning compelling arbitration, justices are in Colorado in the Second Circuit.
Why should we just completely, though, abdicate any knowledge as to federal law as to this issue?
It is not the county's position that you would abdicate. It is the county's position, however, that if you have Nevada law that addresses it, why would we then, if you will, sort of yield the entire question or the answer to the question to a federal law if you've got Nevada law that answers the question. And this court has specifically addressed the question about individuals' employees' rights as it relates to their ability to judicially enforce claims such as grievances through the arbitration process. And although I believe in the Ruiz case, it's not on point in this case in terms of Chapter NRS 38 rights, I believe that it's analogous because really what you have is when the union abandoned the grievance and then Mr. Tansey was allowed to pursue it with the breach of contract action, in effect what he was doing was compelling arbitration. The trial that occurred in this matter was basically the arbitration because the only question was, did Clark County have just cause to terminate? That just cause right that he had, if you will, emanated from the collective bargaining agreement. Since under Nevada law, Tansey did not have standing to appeal an unfavorable arbitration award, he likewise would not have standing, in effect, to appeal his union's abandoned grievance.
Somewhere in my reading of the material, it indicated that he had a right to appeal early on in the administrative proceeding. The union didn't go forward, and it says he could have appealed.
Correct.
A true statement, and I guess the question within that question was, he had provided notice that he had an individual right to exercise that if his union didn't.
And I would just, what you're referring to, you're absolutely correct. It's in the record. Pardon me. Former labor manager Barbara King submitted an affidavit indicating that the county's practice had been that if an individual employee would approach the county with regard to disciplinary matters, the county wouldn't have had any problems permitting an arbitration in that instance.
And was the employee or our employees noticed of that right?
Well, it's not a right since it's a practice. Let me address it in a couple of ways.
Yeah, it becomes problematic once the county extends that practice as you're referring to it.
Well, first of all, may I respond this way. One, it's a practice. Two, it's not a contractual duty or obligation for the county. Three, arguably, it's improper for the county to reach out to a representative member in the midst of a dispute resolution process and communicate or contact him. Arguably, that's an interference, if you will.
Well, I was troubled because in what has been presented somewhere along the line, it was asserted on behalf of the county that he had a right to do this and he didn't do it. And so I'm saying, well, did he know he had that right since that statement was made? That's the only reason I raise that issue.
And my response to that would be, at the point at which he had the right, the county's notice in terms of the county's conduct was that he's represented by his union. And so now we're talking about whether the union communicated, because the union was aware of the county's practice as well, the union's communication with its member. And I might submit as well, Your Honors, that allowance of an individual disciplinary arbitration is not allowance of judicial enforcement of the just cause provision. Those are two very different scenarios.
And this is where it gets convoluted from our standpoint as we look at that federal law that is not being talked about. It seems to say when the bargaining agent acts in what they refer to as bad faith, and it's found, then the party is allowed to be afforded a hearing back before whoever the employer was. At least that was my readings. But so that's kind of the edge I'm looking at right now, wondering why that's not applicable in this particular case, in this alleged hybrid action that you're saying the district court could not look at when they sued both the county and the union at one point.
My response to that would be, on one hand, any sort of alleged deficient representation by the union as it relates to Mr. Tansey is something that is primarily within the exclusive jurisdiction of the Employee Labor Management Relations Board, what's commonly called the EMRB. This court has already said in its case in Rosequist that that's where those kinds of questions are first answered. And that is what I was going to assert as my next point, which is that the district court was likewise without authority to provide any relief to Mr. Tansey as it relates to the breach of duty of fair representation claim. In your Rosequist case, this is a 2002 case, this isn't new law, this is established law. You said that you recognize that claims such as breach of duty of fair representation, those arise out of the union's performance under NRS 288, and so those types of claims are properly determined by the EMRB. And the duty of fair representation, it requires the union in representation as well as in negotiation not to act arbitrarily, not to act discriminatorily, and to act in good faith. That's your Wiener versus Beatty case, 121 Nevada 249. Well, here, the district court actually made findings of the breach of duty of fair representation, and they found that the SEIU acted arbitrarily and capriciously, and that they failed to adequately investigate Mr. Tansey's grievance. The district court was without the power to grant that relief, as the breach of duty of fair representation claim, because the MRB has primary and exclusive jurisdiction, that Tansey should have first exhausted that claim that before his administrative board, the EMRB. Now, in City of Henderson versus Kilgore, this court noted that failure to exhaust all available administrative remedies before proceeding to district court renders the matter unripe for district court review. This court further stated, whether couched in terms of subject matter jurisdiction or ripeness, a person generally must exhaust all available administrative remedies before initiating a lawsuit, and failure to do so renders the controversy non-justiciable. That's your Allstate Insurance Company versus Thorpe. Now, justiciability is a predicate to judicial relief. That's Doe v. Bryant, 102 Nevada 523, 1986. The judgment that was provided to Mr. Tansey is legally void. He did not have standing. His union was the party to the agreement. He was not a signatory to the agreement. He was not a party to the agreement, as when you did your analysis in Ruiz, you decided that Mr. Ruiz was not a party to the arbitration process. Neither was he a party to the agreement. When you're not a party, you don't have standing. How can you enforce an agreement to which you're not a party?
Ms. Kimmich, you're into your rebuttal time. Okay. Reserve.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I'm going to give you an extra minute, and Mr. Marks, I'll give you 16 minutes. I'm going to give you 424, Ms. Givens, and you'll have 16 minutes.
Thank you. Justice Chairman, members of the court. I think the issue in this case is how should a hybrid action be handled as it relates to a public employee. And we're going to try to end the confusion because we've been fighting this for over, I don't know, at least half a dozen years as to where to go, whether it's EMRB or it's district court, or now we're hearing for the first time it's nowhere. We assumed in our brief that you have two separate forms. You think of Thomas and Mack as a stadium and T-Mobile as a stadium. One is the EMRB, one is district court. We initially went to the EMRB, the county filed a motion to dismiss. There's no jurisdiction over the county because the jurisdiction pursuant to Rosequist is over the union. You can't get full relief, as you know, you've all been public employees or are public employees. Mr. Tansey is a code enforcement officer.
But Mr. Marks, some of our case law indicates that exclusive relief as to union, which is a predicate of going back after the employer, is the EMRB.
I'm going to explain why that won't work, because Mr. Tansey works for Clark County.
I understand that, right. And I understand this difficulty, but I'm still queried when you said you went before the EMRB. Was that as to Clark County and the union, right, or only Clark County?
Both the union and Clark County. That's why we've exhausted.
Did they dismiss the union as well,
no,
as Clark County?
They held the union, but we couldn't get full relief against Clark County because you can't get reinstated. And for a public employee, under their CBA, and as you're aware, under the 14th Amendment, a public employee has a property right in their job, and that's why there has to be a remedy somewhere. I think, with all due respect to my worthy opponent, we have briefed extensively, and they have ignored, in their rebuttal brief, the issue of the 14th Amendment. Before unionization of public employees, before the 90s, we all learned back in law school, a public employee is not at will, has a 14th Amendment property interest in their job. They did not lose that 14th Amendment property interest when they unionized or entered into a CBA. The issue is, how do you handle that tension? Now, in the private sector for 60 years, both under the NLRA Act, Section 301, and the Vaca case that's extensively argued, a private employer, let's say a culinary worker, would sue the culinary and the casino in federal court. They would have to allege a duty of fair representation breach, meaning the union arbitrarily and in bad faith breached their duty to take the matter to arbitration. And we're not talking about post-arbitration. They're citing the reads. We're talking about arbitration. They're right under the CBA to only be fired for just cause, because that's what the issue always is. That's the way it's handled in federal court. The judge below held us to that standard. Interestingly enough, my opponent argued half a dozen times that was the standard, Vaca v. Sykes. She never argued, and I understand you can raise subject matter any time, she never argued subject matter jurisdiction, because she conceded and thought that Vaca would be such a high standard we would not need it. That means if a union's negligent or just erroneous, the employee loses. So that's a very high standard to meet. Judge Bonaventure found we met that standard. And there has to be jurisdiction because it's a garden variety breach of contract case. You record a general jurisdiction. We're not in federal court where it's limited jurisdiction. There absolutely is jurisdiction. I'd point out if you go to page 13 of their opening brief where they have their jurisdiction statement, none of the cases they cite, they cite a family court case on jurisdiction, they cite the Volley case, they cite a California case, and they cite the Bryan case. None of those cases remotely support the position that you don't have subject matter jurisdiction over a breach of contract case. So I'm confident you have subject matter jurisdiction over the employer, meaning the county. We're not suggesting that you have to allege the union breach of duty of fair representation. We're not suggesting you have to decide whether to sue the union or not in this case. They cited the Bailey case. Wiener v. Bailey, this was an en banc opinion 11 years ago by this Supreme Court, so there is law in Nevada, where you said you would look to the federal law as guidance. You cited that when the legislature set up your mini EMRA statute, it was modeled after the NRA, and you would look to federal precedent to decide issues such as duty of fair representation. The federal court has set a very high standard. We argue in our brief, and I'll get to that point in a little while, there should be a lower standard. But I don't think you can go wrong under the Beatty case by affirming this judgment under the precedent of Beatty and suggesting that you would look to a hybrid action as the remedy. For the first time in their appeal, they're essentially saying the employee has no remedy. That's just legally, factually, I think intellectually wrong. The cases, no case they've cited across the country supports that. Certainly the federal system in which unions, that's the, you know, pole star of unionization, the cases coming from the 30s, the Vaca standard's been the law for 60 some odd years. The Alaska model, and Alaska would be a similar small western state, it's a right-to-work state, they recognize that if you made the employee follow the Vaca standard, what's the difference between public and private employment? You're forcing county employees to jump through the same hoops they would have to jump through for the culinary, and you're just totally ignoring their 14th Amendment property interest. So the Casey standard, which arose out of the Alaska Supreme Court and was followed by the California Supreme Court, recognizes that a non-at-will employee, a government employee, should have the right to directly in court pursue their termination if the union will not do it for whatever reason. There may be times when the union negligently or erroneously won't pursue it, and they suggest you shouldn't force the public employee to jump through the higher hurdle of Vaca. We asked the district court below to set the standard. He respectfully declined and suggested we met the Vaca standard and left it for this court to decide what should be the standard going forward so other employees are not in the same boat. I think you can appreciate if you're in a right-to-work state and you're dealing with a general work, blue-collar workforce who will not understand the intricacies of all these issues. There should be a simple way to vindicate their rights if they feel they were wrongfully terminated. That doesn't mean they're going to win. We had a win on the merits at trial. We're just saying, where should the dispute arise? My opponent is essentially saying, if the union will not process your grievance, even in a right-to-work state, the employee has no remedy. That would violate the 14th Amendment to the Constitution, because before there were unions in Clark County, the employees had their 14th Amendment right. They didn't lose that by joining a union. So I don't see how they are suggesting a logical jurisprudential principle that you'd want to adopt. And they never argued below. They argued the higher standard. And in their brief, if you really read their jurisdiction cases, they're not on point at all. They've cited no case that would suggest a public employee who decides to join a union somehow loses all their rights if the union won't process their grievance. They mentioned Ruiz. Don't be confused by their Ruiz citation. In a footnote in Ruiz, you reverse the district court and you allowed Ruiz, who was a case my office handled, to pursue his district court remedies on the Peace Officer's Bill of Rights. In a footnote, you said Ruiz post-arbitration, because we're under Chapter 38. Post-arbitration in Chapter 38, Mr. Ruiz did not have an independent right to contest him losing his arbitration in district court. It never said under Chapter 288 he would not have the right to arbitrate if the union didn't arbitrate.
So that's how you would distinguish Ruiz from what Ms. Gibbons argued.
Right, because she kind of smudged the fact that Chapter 38 is the same as Chapter 288. They're two different chapters. Chapter 38, as you know, is the broad, you've got to be a party to an arbitral agreement. That applies to commercial contracts. That applies to thousands of different situations. Chapter 288 is public, local government employees, and it's limited to that. You weren't going to, in Ruiz, expand Chapter 38 without the legislature, I assume, speaking. So that was consistent. It's certainly consistent with my argument. Chapter 288 is the chapter that obviously allows local government employees to pursue their rights and pursue their union if their union doesn't.
What's your position as to Del Castro?
Del Castello? So Del Castello is essentially son of Vaca. That supports our position that you proceed in a hybrid action. And this is new law. I mean, this has been the law in the federal system for 60-some-odd years. I think this is a 1967 case was Vaca and Del Castello followed. Certainly it doesn't support their position. There's no federal case that says you have no remedy. We've been frustrated. If we go to the MRB, they say go to district court. If you go to district court, they say go to the MRB. You've never decided a case. There have been ODAs and different orders, but there's never been a publishable opinion deciding it. I think the employees need to know where they go and where they should go.
Mr. Marks, let me ask you this. Justice Cherry doesn't mind borrowing one of his usual questions. If we agreed with you, and bless Ms. Gibbons, the same thing, and we were writing an opinion, what should the opinion say?
Okay, so you have to decide two points. First is you can narrowly affirm this, that there clearly was subject matter jurisdiction. It was a garden variety breach of contract case. The district judge found the facts. They had conceded the law below. We met that standard. We should prevail. We are asking you to adopt the Casey standard, which is the standard that would allow a public employee to go directly to court. That would be something beyond just what you have to do to decide in our favor. So public employees would know, union, non-union, union pursuing the grievance, union not pursuing the grievance. They would be on notice that they could go forward and litigate in district court because they have a property interest, a 14th Amendment interest in their job. That, I think, is in accordance with both the state law and the federal law and is the right decision. It doesn't mean they're going to win. It just means they go and have a chance to play the game. They're arguing for no remedy, it doesn't matter what set of facts there were, Mr. Tansey's out and he has no right to pursue his case. Obviously, on the merits, we won. We proved there was a breach of duty of fair representation, and we proved there was a wrongful termination. So that's what we're asking you to do. If you don't want to go that way, you could adopt VACA. Certainly under the Wiener Beatty case, you could adopt it. You can't go wrong by following the federal law as analogous. The legislature opened that by adopting the MRA statute analogous to the NLRA statute. But we think that you have to recognize public employees have the 14th Amendment right, which they don't lose. To follow up on Justice Douglas, Clark County had a secret policy, because I think in their mind they knew there was a 14th Amendment issue. So if an employee wanted to arbitrate, they would not refuse it, but they never told him. We only found out through discovery in other cases and then brought it to the judge's attention, in this case at the trial. Nobody knew that policy. I don't even know if the union knew that policy. That's the right policy because there's a 14th Amendment right, but they don't advertise or publicize it. When you're fired, they don't say, you know, go to your union, through your union you can grieve, or if the union won't do it, you have a right to grieve it and arbitrate it on your own. They don't tell anyone. And certainly under the due process clause of the 14th Amendment, they should tell people. There's no logical reason why they would keep that secret from their own employees. And that was obviously an issue at the trial in front of the district court judge.
Do you look at that particular issue as a, it was categorized as a, I guess a process or whatever, opposed to a right or opposed to, how do you see
that? It's a right, Your Honor. You have a 14th Amendment right. It's double talk to say that somehow they couldn't interfere. They communicate with employees all the time. It's not an interference on the termination document to say you have a right to, we're a right to work state. So why they hide behind the union, I don't know. They don't know when they fire people. Are they in the union, out of the union? People could be in the union, could decide to quit. I'm not sure that the county would even know. So their answer is not correct. On the termination slip itself, it can clearly just say you have a right to arbitrate with or without your union. That never could be considered interference at all, because they're firing someone and they're giving them a termination notice. And I would think you'd want to clarify this area of the law, and also consistent with if we're a right to work state, then employees may have to do this on their own. They should certainly know what their rights are. And they have those rights under the 14th Amendment, regardless of the CBA. The CBA can't take away constitutional rights. They never seriously argued that below. They're not really arguing it in their brief, but in argument here today, they're suggesting there's no remedy that somehow these government employees lose their constitutional rights to due process when they join the union. That's just not the law anywhere in the country. Unless you have any further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Patterson. Ms. Gibbons, in rebuttal, you have 4 minutes and 24 seconds.
Thank you.
Yeah, Ms. Gibbons, I'll be curious about the last question Mr. Marks raised. Well, why didn't you argue this particular issue below before Judge Spahn? I'm not sure.
Because, Your Honor, to the county, there is no constitutional question to be argued, primarily because the county's never suggested that the employee is without remedy. Contrary to what counsel just said, employees have the right to file prohibited labor practices before the EMRB. In fact, I think it's part of the record too, if you look at the county's very first motion to dismiss that was granted before the EMRB, that's what we argued. All Mr. Tansey needed to do was frame his claim against the county in prohibited practices terms. He did frame his claim before the EMRB, which the statutory scheme does not allow the EMRB to expand its jurisdiction to consider breach of contract actions. That's the problem. He could have argued that the county somehow interfered or restrained or discriminated against him in his capacity as an employee. He refused to do that. He did not frame his argument or his claim against us as a prohibited practice claim, but as a breach of contract. And the EMRB's hands were tied. They're like, we don't consider those. Our state is not designed statutorily to deal with both a breach of duty of fair representation as well as a breach of contract against the employer. We're not set up that way. The statute does not provide for that. And I want to add, this point, to Justice Douglas's question concerning employees and their ability to pursue their grievance on their own and whether it was some sort of secret. What happens is at the onset of the dispute resolution process, the employee is provided a document saying, you elect. Do you want union representation or do you? Do you not? In this case, Mr. Tansey told the county, I want union representation. At that point in time, the union's representing him. The county is, it's similar to when an attorney is representing a client. It would be inappropriate for another attorney to call a representative client. And so it wasn't a secret, and as I stated, it's not in the contract. It wasn't required. It wasn't a duty to let them know that if you decided to pursue this on your own without union representation, and it's only in disciplinary matters, they would have been allowed the opportunity. So I wanted to just really emphasize that the county's not suggesting that the employee's without a remedy. The county's suggesting that the employee does not have a CBA remedy for breach of contract in the district court, and the employee does not have a common law breach of contract remedy in district court because he's not a party. He has no standing in the contract. It's the union and the employee.
So again, to ask you the same question I asked Mr. Marks, that if we were going to write an opinion on that and we agreed with your position, what would you want us to say?
I'd want you to say that you're going to consider that public policy considerations outweigh a so-called individual union member's ability to judicially enforce a breach of contract in district court, that those policy considerations would be that you favor upholding grievance procedures that are bargained for by the parties to the CBA. Public policy considerations that would say that there should not be a frustration to the purpose of collective bargaining to resolve disputes. Public policy that says public employers shouldn't have to defend countless numbers of lawsuits by individual employees. Public policy considerations that public employers should not have greater demand on its public resources than contemplated in negotiations. The county, when it was sitting across the table from SEIU, never contemplated that the thousands of employees that we cover and that are covered under the bargaining agreement would have the ability to take us to court for just cause claims. A public policy that would say that we would not allow unions to avoid liability to the members. If there was a problem here, it was because of the union's communication with Mr. Tansey. And so, ultimately, it's the county's position that subject matter jurisdiction, it can't be waived, can't be forfeited, can't be conferred, can't be conceded. That's what they argued with judicial estoppel. I wish I had that much power, but I just don't under the law. Subject matter was lacking here. There's just no action of the parties that can confer subject matter jurisdiction upon a court where the court has no authority to act. That's Friedman versus 8th Judicial District Court of Nevada. Got 1 second. Since May 18, 2011, when Mr. Tansey filed his first amended complaint with the county's position has been singularly, exclusively, and emphatically, he should not be able to sue Clark County for breach of the collectively bargained agreement. The judgment in the court below is void if the district court lacks subject matter jurisdiction. Respectfully submitted. Thank you.
Thank you. Court thanks both of you for your spirited arguments and briefs in this matter. This matter will stand.